He built a system that keeps him winning, became a poster boy for MAGA Republicans, and forged close ties with Vladimir Putin. But with voters heading to the polls this weekend, Viktor Orban's grip on Hungary is under real pressure. And critics say what's at stake isn't just an election, but democracy itself. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty, and Hungary goes to the polls this Sunday. But this isn't just another election in a small EU state, because Viktor Orban hasn't just governed his country for the past 16 years. He's reshaped it into what he calls an illiberal state. He's defended this as part of what he says is a battle to save Western civilization, leaning into the great replacement conspiracy theory, saying things like, we are not a mixed race and we do not want to become a mixed race. So Hungary has become a place where elections still happen, where there's still opposition, but the rules are bent in favour of Orban and his allies, and institutions like universities and media are controlled by him. Now, throw in a few extra twists this week. A sitting US Vice President, J.D. Vance, flying in days before the vote, addressing rallies, openly backing Orban and attacking the EU. A surge of AI-generated deepfakes targeting the opposition. And a leader who's gone from anti-Soviet dissident to a political ally of Vladimir Putin.
What has happened in the midst of this election campaign is one of the worst examples of foreign election interference that I've ever seen or ever even read about. The bureaucrats in Brussels have tried to destroy the economy of Hungary. They have tried to make Hungary less energy independent. They have tried to drive up costs for Hungarian consumers, and they've done it all because they hate this guy.
So what exactly has Orban built in Hungary? Why has it become a model for parts of the American right, especially around the MAGA movement? Is it now under threat? And with everything at stake this weekend, is Hungary still a democracy? I'm joined now by Abel Bede, a freelance journalist based in Hungary. Abel, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thanks so much for having me.
So this election has been described as Viktor Orban's battle, the battle of his political life. Tell me about the atmosphere in Budapest and across Hungary ahead of this Sunday's vote.
Yes, that's a very good way to describe it, actually. In Hungary at the moment, interest in politics is extremely high. It's very likely, this election is very likely to be the election with the highest turnout since the fall of communism. Viktor Orban's main opposition, the Tisza party led by Péter Magyar, is in independent polls currently the favorite to win the election, with some suggesting that it's possible that they might even have a chance to gain a constitutional majority. This week, Magyar has continued his tour throughout the country. He has 4 to 6 or 7 rallies a day, attracting crowds even in smaller cities or smaller towns and settlements at, you know, sometimes during the middle of the day or in the morning even. And in his campaign, Magyar has been mostly focusing on the condition of Hungarian state institutions, sort of healthcare, education and railways. And he's pledged to unlock EU funds to improve the conditions of those institutions. Meanwhile, Viktor Orban's campaign has been focusing on international politics, world politics, most prominently the war in Ukraine. The Fidesz campaign positions Orban as a person of significant influence on the world stage, who is the only person who can prevent Hungary from joining the war, with sort of Hungarian youth dying in the battlefield. That is their narrative. And this sort of international focused campaign had another element this week, as you said, when J.D. Vance came for a visit to Budapest and held a rally in Budapest in the football club MTK's stadium.
So you mentioned the opposition leader there, Peter Magyar, who was an ally of Orban at one point, that he's been leading in all of these independent polls since late 2024. And yet there is still a sense that Viktor Orban can do it. And we'll get to why that is in a moment. So it is a really competitive race. But the election that you talk about and the turnout that you talk about is so significant. Why is it, do you think, that this has been seen as the most consequential election since the fall of communism? What's really at stake here, Abel?
Well, there are several reasons. You know, purely on a domestic level, Orban has been sort of a giant of post-communist Hungarian politics. He's been a key figure since 1990. He was first prime minister between 1998 and 2002 and returned to power in 2010 and has been in power ever since, where he built a sort of liberal system or a hybrid regime, as some others call it. In terms of the more global context, some say that this is also an election about Hungary's place in the world, how settled it is in the alliance network it is in currently, so the European Union and NATO. You know, it's not like Orban is campaigning on leaving on either of those institutions, but he's often expressed sympathy for Russian views, the views of the current government, and on the EU level, he tends to oppose aid for Ukraine, and the tensions in that sort of relationship tensions have been increasing, and especially in the past few weeks and months, increasing revelations about the Hungarian foreign minister Péter Szijjártó leaking information to his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov from European Union Council meetings. Sometimes there are, you know, revelations from credible news outlets that he's been having phone calls at the middle of sort of breaks between EU Council meetings with Lavrov.
I mentioned at the top of the piece there that Viktor Orban's vision was to create this illiberal state, and he talks about an illiberal democracy. What does that actually mean in practice if you are living in Hungary?
Well, you know, I'm sure at the moment there are several PhD theses and books being written about this very topic, but I think the simplest way to sort of summarize it is the systemic hollowing out of institutions. So formally there's an independent judiciary, but it's filled with loyalists. Formally, every company can contest sort of important public procurement tenders, but it's very likely that oligarchs aligned with Viktor Orban, sometimes close friends of Viktor Orban, or even the son-in-law of Viktor Orban, like István Tiborcs, would win. And in terms of institutions, as I said, it's the hollowing out of institutions. And while nominally they are independent, the power is sort of centralized within the hands of the prime minister.
Let's talk about the election itself, because a lot of the reporting suggests that, yes, the opposition leader is ahead in the polls and should on the day win the election. But what happens on the ground in elections will actually make him winning very, very difficult. So talk to me about what is done to sort of skew the fairness of the contest and to ensure that people are perhaps not voting in a fair way.
Yes, so elections in Hungary are sometimes described as free but not fair. And there are, of course, the structural issues we talked about in terms of the media hegemony that contribute to sort of distorted narratives and, you know, significantly more space for narratives of the Fidesz party. On election day itself, the good news is that once the ballots are cast, at that point, there's surprisingly good safeguards to avoid sort of purposefully miscounting the votes or sort of distort the votes cast that way. However, recently, there was a documentary released which does have English subtitles, so your listeners might be able to watch it. It's called The Price of the Vote, which confirms suspicions and reveals gross sort of voter intimidation and corruption in very rural and poor areas of Hungary. For example, in a tiny village where the mayor is also the only GP in town, There's evidence that in that documentary that she threatened her patients that she would not give out their prescription medication unless they vote for Fidesz.
Can you also talk to me about the voter tourism that is taking place there and the vote buying that is allegedly happening in Hungary?
Yes, in the past few elections, there were suspicious examples of a high number of individuals, and we are talking double or sometimes triple digits, registering to the same address and voting one way. And in those constituencies, this likely contributed to the victory of some Fidesz individual MPs. It also emerged that in these very poor areas of Hungary, sometimes people are given money to vote for Fidesz if they prove that they voted for Fidesz by taking a photograph of their ballot paper.
There's also a very modern element to this election campaign that I think we'll probably see in a lot of elections going forward. Lots of deep fakes and disinformation. How significant has that been?
Yeah, so an important revelations in February came out by the investigative news outlet We Square that the sort of Russian GRU agents with expertise in political manipulation, the GRU is the sort of military intelligence service of Russia. So GRU agents arrived in Hungary with the purpose of sort of boosting Orbán's campaign. An example of disinformation or misinformation online, in early March, a government-aligned media outlet published an article which alleged that a Ukrainian general threatened Viktor Orbán personally and Viktor Orbán's family personally. And sort of it emerged that that was sort of an edited video of a retired formal Ukrainian general who is now working as a YouTuber and has no formal position within the Ukrainian army. And, you know, this man goes into sometimes himself into conspiracy theories, but it was edited in a way that made it appear that he was threatening Viktor Orbán's family. And sort of there was a few days in the campaign when the sort of Fidesz narrative was revolving around sort of these allegations. And the Prime Minister's social media page posted videos of him anxiously calling his family. But it emerged that that was an edited video which emerged initially on the Russian internet.
Let's now go to this quite extraordinary visit by the American Vice President J.D. Vance to Hungary this week. He said, ostensibly, that he didn't come to tell the people of Hungary how to vote. And yet it was clearly a public endorsement by J.D. Vance and by Donald Trump. He did say at one of the rallies, we have to get Orbán re-elected. We're just going to listen to a quick clip now of an interaction between J.D. Vance and Donald Trump via a mobile phone conversation at a rally in Hungary this week.
So before I started my remarks, I actually had a special guest that asked that I give him a phone call, and we'll see. Let's hope he actually answers, but this is going to be very embarrassing. All right.
I'm sorry. The person you were trying to reach has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet.
Okay. Try one more time. Hello, Mr. President. How are you?
Hi. Hey, J.D., could you give me a second? I'm just... Oh. Wow, that's some... That's some... You have that, J.D.
Mr. President, you are on with about 5,000 Hungarian patriots, and I think they love you even more than they love Viktor Orbán.
Well, I can't believe that. I can't believe that, because I love Hungary, and I love that Viktor. I'll tell you, he's a fantastic man. We've had a tremendous relationship, and he does a job. Remember this. He didn't allow people to storm your country and invade your country like other people have and ruin their countries, frankly. He's kept your country good. He's kept Hungarian people in your country. And he's done a fantastic job. And let me tell you, I like him a lot, but if I didn't think he did a good job, I wouldn't be making a call like this. But boy, that sounds like a big crowd, and that sounds like my kind of people.
I mean, I have to say, when I first saw that clip, speaking of deep fakes, That's what I thought it was. I wasn't convinced it was real until I saw Channel 4 News play it and then confirm, no, no, this really did happen. I mean, his presence there, his attendance at these rallies, his clear endorsement of Viktor Orban, is that having any impact on the polls?
Well, Vance clearly talked about issues that are prevalent in the Fidesz campaign, like energy security, and J.D. Vance even accused the European Union of interfering with the election. But I would say that this sort of campaign event with J.D. Vance in Budapest, it signifies structural issues with the current Orbán campaign, because while this event was taking place, Orbán's opponent, Péter Magyar, was touring the country and talking about cost of living issues and the state of the Hungarian sort of state institutions, which is something that lots of people in Hungary are concerned about. And the Orbán campaign, which was very international focused, has not really been able to come up with any sort of answer to those structural issues. So I would think it's very unlikely that this visit would have the impact Orbán would have desired.
We'll wait and see whether it does have, as you say, impact, and whether it was a positive impact or indeed it could have been a negative impact. And that was something that would play out on Sunday. But Orbán is clearly a favourite in Trump world. How did that relationship develop, and what is it about Orbán's model of governing that resonates so strongly with Donald Trump and indeed the wider MAGA movement?
So that relationship started in 2016 during the presidential election campaign, Trump's first campaign, when it was Viktor Orbán who was the first world leader who ended up endorsing him. So in a way, Trump is repaying a favor. But in Trump's first term, that relationship was not very visible. The main thing then was how Donald Trump did not say anything about the Fidesz government's decision to sort of kick an American university, Central European University, out of the country. The sort of warming up of the relationship happened during Biden's presidency when Trump was not in the White House, and sort of initial sort of movements from Fidesz, which is Viktor Orban's party, Fidesz aligned think tanks emerged then, first towards Ron DeSantis when it looked like he was about to win the primaries. But when it became clear that Donald Trump would be the Republican nominee, that's when these think tanks tried to find connections with his team. What the American right probably sees in Orbán is his sort of political Christianity, his family policy, well, nominally his family policy, and of course Orbán's anti-immigrant stance. And what they want to learn from Orbán is that they know how to get to power, but they obviously, in that, then it appeared that they are not sure how to keep it. And in Orbán, they had a model as someone who has similar politics to them and has managed to retain his power for 16 years.
Let's just look briefly at Viktor Orbán's relationship with Russia, because that has been fascinating to see how that has evolved over the years. I mean, how did he go from being this anti-Soviet activist to one of Vladimir Putin's closest allies? And what does that relationship with Russia look like now today after 16 years in power?
So a big change in that relationship, it seems to be dated to 2009. At that point, Orbán was in opposition, but he was, at that point, everyone knew in Hungary and elsewhere that he would be the one to win the election in 2010. He then visited St. Petersburg, and we don't know. It's one of the big questions of sort of Hungarian investigative journalism or Hungarian politics. What was the conversation then that took place, which caused Orbán's turn towards Russia? But since he came to power, Orbán's been busy building energy links with Russia. Before the coronavirus pandemic and before the Ukraine war, he met Vladimir Putin around once a year. And he also invited the Russians to help Hungary construct its second nuclear power plant. And it became apparent, especially since the war in Ukraine broke out, that sort of Viktor Orban tends to advocate for policies that would also benefit Russian interests. So it's a very close relationship, which has been very difficult for the European Union to navigate, because, of course, Viktor Orban, like all other heads of government, has a veto at the European Council.
Abel, what's at stake this weekend beyond Hungary itself, if Orban loses or indeed if he wins?
For the European Union at these meetings, especially since the war in Ukraine broke out, Orban has been obstructing a lot of Ukraine-related policy and sort of Europe's ability to give an effective and united answer to the threat of Russia. So should he lose the election, I think that would result in a more efficient operation for the European Union and sort of a more united face, at least until other sort of politicians in other European countries who are similar to Orban get to power. But that's one thing. The other thing is that Orban likes to fund politicians like him in other European countries. Like, he even gave a loan to Marine Le Pen in the previous French presidential campaign. So I would say his soft power across Europe would likely decrease. If he stays in power, I think the European Union has probably very significant questions to ask about what to do with him, because the situation seems to be quite untenable at the moment.
Abel Berry, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us on News Talk Daily today.
Thank you very much.
And as we discussed there, this is one of those stories that goes far beyond one country, because I think what's happening in Hungary right now, the way that power is built and shaped and held onto and what it takes to hold onto it, is being watched very closely elsewhere, not just in Europe, but in Washington and Moscow too. Well, that's it for today's episode of News Talk Daily. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to like, follow and subscribe on Go Loud, on Apple, Spotify, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. Until next Monday morning, goodbye and have a lovely weekend.